You're with Dan on Double J.
You've got a brand new record, Help a Stranger, the third album from the Saboteurs / Raconteurs. 11 years have passed between this album and the last. Did you find that your outlook on the world had changed significantly, given that the last time that you wrote together was so long ago?
Yeah, I think, well, given the fact that we both have kids now and...
We have each other's kids.
And we have... on the weekends.
Yeah.
And that alone kind of changes everything, is a game changer, you know. So when it came right down to it, I think it was all kind of felt the same again, you know, just sort of that familiar.
You get all, you start playing music and everything starts to feel like only a day's passed since last time we played in a room together. It's pretty wild when that happens.
How intuitive is that? Like, how long had it been since you had been in a room? Because you're obviously friends, but how long had it passed since you'd been in a room jamming together and writing songs together?
I mean, it had been a long time. Yeah. Each of us being kind of busy doing his own thing.
Mm.
So, yeah, it was kind of, you know, I mean, we'd kind of see each other in passing or hanging out or occasionally, but...
I would see Brendan at gas stations at a different pump, and a different pump, and I realized, wow, you know, it's time to get an electric car. So I don't see him anymore unless it's the actual rehearsal.
Yeah. And I'm still pumping gas at the same old pump.
Mm-hmm.
This record, I mean, you know, you could probably take some of these songs as being a reflection of the culture. They could be a little bit more vague. Do you feel like you're always sort of reflecting what's happening in the moment when you're writing with the Saboteurs?
Yeah, I guess every song's different to me. And what's interesting about this band is that me and Brendan write the songs together. Sometimes we're generating them in the room together, and sometimes we've written, you know, 70% of it on our own by ourselves and brought it together, and then we're fleshing it out as a group. And the whole band really produced the album. You know, it really says, you know, produced by the Raconteurs this time, because it really felt that all four guys were doing that. It was the most hands-on all four of us have been together making a record. So that's a really great environment to work under, all those things I just described.
Why was this the first time that you'd done that? Why did it take you so long to be so hands-on?
We didn't trust one another. And
contractually, we weren't allowed, for starters.
Lawyers and, you know, you got to earn trust. You don't just give it away. Right. And
well, you can buy it, but...
Yes, you definitely can buy it. And I had to at the end of this album. No, it was nice to see that the band we're all different now. We've all had so much more experience with what we're doing, writing and performing and age and everything. So you it's nice to see that, wow, you know, there's elements to production and care about what you're doing that even the bass player and the drummer in the band, Patrick and LJ, care way more about certain things that they used to, and small things that are, you know, superfluous don't bother us anymore because of experience. It's really, really interesting place to be.
Yeah, it sounds like a good place as well. You're worrying about what matters and flicking away what doesn't.
Yes, I think so.
Call and response are obviously big cornerstones of great pop music. Are Saboteurs songs always a conversation between the two of you, between the two frontmen and songwriters?
I don't think you really would want to hear a conversation between me and Brendan because he's probably telling me about the type of butter that was on his toast that morning. And I'm probably explaining to him why the third paragraph in the book I'm reading seemed to change my whole perspective on maybe I shouldn't even read anymore. This is a waste of time. So I don't know who's right and who's wrong, but by the end of that 45 minutes, you're probably going to be pretty exhausted.
But how are you writing this when you I guess, putting this song together? Because you are, they're not just Brendan Benson or Jack White songs, you know. There are songs where you literally are just bouncing off each other. Are you in the room writing those together? Is that a necessity for the Saboteurs?
That's how it worked on this record, for sure, I think, mostly. It was reactionary. I think we were just kind of, I mean, a lot of it was that way, you know, just sort of live in the studio, kind of me reacting to him. Maybe he would go out and sing something and I'd be inspired to sing, you know what I mean? That kind of stuff.
That's the good stuff when that happens.
Yeah.
When you can inspire one another. And actually, you know, maybe also I can rescue Brendan's songs too.
The confidence, Jack.
Yeah, you know, you're either born with the confidence or you don't. You just got to be born with it.
There was a long time awesome. Between, you know, you had Broken Boy Soldiers that came out in 2006, 2 years later, Consolers of the Lonely, and then, you know, 11 years to the next record. Yeah. Was it also a case of you guys just really missed each other? There was a
we
hunger
did.
To get back into that room together and play?
We did. We spent the first 3 days. We found a way of, there's this technique we had learned about. I think one of us had been in Tibet or something. It was a travel, I think. But we found this technique where you could take four sleeping bags and turn them into one giant sleeping bag. So the first 3 days were spent, we'd say naked, right?
Yeah, sure.
I would say without clothing, all of us in that giant sleeping bag.
Wow.
And then we decided if we can make it through this without touching one another, we can write together.
It's like Five
in the
Nights at Freddy's.
It's
sort of like that. Like if we can go the night.
Is that a toothpaste you just mentioned?
Without.
It was that way. We don't plan anything ahead of time. So that being that long before we got back in the studio together was just a happenstance. I don't think we would have planned that out that way. We would have said maybe a year later or 2 years from now or something. But everyone's just been so busy, and half of that is of course my fault too for being in three different bands and having Third Man Records and all that jazz. So it takes me a little bit longer nowadays, but. Well, when we got back in, it felt, wow, it's almost like a second honeymoon because all that time spent, made everybody even more excited and electric about making it work. So I loved it.
Jackie said that you fix Brendan's songs when he needs them. But really, what does he teach you about songwriting when you're watching him work? What does he show you about songwriting?
Seriously, though, I mean, to be serious about it, he can't teach me a goddamn thing. So it's if you want the truth, you have – no, I'm just kidding. No, but Brendan is a real song craftsman, absolutely brilliant the way he can put things together. He just doesn't know how to sell it. So that's where I come in just to –
seal the deal.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, I'm completely serious. The first part of that was serious. He is an incredible song craftsman, and it's a joy to be part of that because from the scene we were from in Detroit, Brendan is the best songwriter of everybody in town that we were all friends with, all the garage rockers and everybody. He was the best songwriter. So for me, it's kind of an amazing experience to have the best rhythm section from our scene, the Greenhorns rhythm section, and to be co-songwriting with Brendan. So selfishly for me, it's an amazing place to be.
And what about you, Brendan? What does Jack teach you about songwriting?
I think Jack teaches me, I think, just to kind of just forget. Forget about the songwriting part. Just feel it, he reminds me about that. It reminds me to kind of that it's in the heart, really, where you're, where it comes from. It's not from a chord book or, music theory or anything like that. It's just – it should be sort of primal. Or, what's the word here? I'm
intuitive?
Intuitive, yes. And, that's the kind of thing that I think I strive for, I've been striving for my whole life, is just to kind of get back to just that, just all feeling, all heart.
Only child, sensitive soul. You see the beauty in everything without ever being told.
It looks like there's an incredible energy between the two of you. Even watching some videos of the performance that you just put on in Nashville at Third Man Records to welcome the return of the Saboteurs on stage. Mm. It just looks like you're having so much fun together, all four of you.
Absolutely not. incorrect. You got to understand. It's about selling it, So if I can pretend,
if I make it
look like we like each other on stage, it sells a whole other thing. Oh, that's so sweet, and we immediately walk off stage to two different limousines.
And we actually have a coach backstage. An acting coach.
He has an acting coach. I have
a pitching coach,
which is strange. Yeah. Not a lot of people in music have that,
right.
But you are having a good time.
No, it's really fulfilling. I can say that for sure. It's nice to be. We played these shows recently, and it's just interesting just to be on stage. Having just come off a tour of my own last year, there's no set list, so I'm sort of like on all pistons are firing constantly. What am I going to do next? What's going to happen next? Kind of a feeling. It's nice to just play sort of like be the guitar player in the band for certain songs and watch the rest of these amazing musicians in this band perform. It's nice to sit there. And sometimes I'll take the strap on the guitar and I'll press a loop pedal that sort of just plays the chords, the same ones I just played. And I put that over a mannequin of myself on stage. And then I can just go backstage and watch on a monitor what those guys are doing, and they're incredible. These guys.
When you really, you know, step back and watch them.
Yeah, when I really get a chance to just take a break, it's nice.
This is you mastering the art of live performance, Jack.
Yes.
You finally got it sorted out.
I got it all figured out now.
The album begins with a song that really combines the attack of your voice, Jack, and also the soaring pop beauty of your voice, Brendan. Can you tell me about starting the record with Bored and Raised and that particular song?
It was wild because we
it's funny you should say that.
Brendan he says that because he was...
I was kind of conflicted about that song being the first, although I felt it was a great opener to to the album, but I was conflicted about my part in it. The first thing you hear from me is...
phrase California born and raised was... He didn't want that to be his opening line.
That's like a weak
line.
Entry, you know, weak entrance. But... Whatever. Hopefully the melody kind of makes up for it. It was one of those lyrics, though, that just kind of came out and we couldn't change it. And just, you know, it's like, God, it fits, doesn't it? Like,
the rest of the band loves it. It's only Brendan. So don't just ignore what he's telling you.
That rhythm section of Jack and Patrick is the engine room behind what you two do out the front of the Saboteurs. What is it about the way that they sync together that really sings to you?
What's very, very cool about LJ and Patrick, the drums and bass of the Saboteurs, they are the best rhythm section from our scene from the early 2000s. They in the late 90s.
And beyond,
and
really.
Exactly, and beyond. They are still... some of the best players I've ever played with, and if not the best. They have a swing to them, I think, that a lot of modern rock and roll rhythm sections don't have. It's a swing that came from this sort of blue-eyed soul background that they came from in the Greenhorns, where they were just, whatever it was, they could play Otis Redding song or Yardbird song or whatever it was, and they could really do these rave-ups and swing it.
And read each other's minds. It's nuts.
It's great to be on stage with them.
Well, there's a lot of different sounds in this record. You know, you've got the sort of Nashville soul, Detroit funk. There's a lot of other different sounds just beside that I kind of can't put my finger on. Do you each bring a different ingredient to this sort of gumbo that is the Saboteurs?
It's nice that way because you can... you can have so many more different things when you're in a band like that. In the age that we are now, there's less and less rules. You have to apply your own rules, which I've spent a lot of time over the years making up rules for myself just personally to get into different scenarios. But this is a band like, well, there's no real rules. We can make it sound like whatever we want to. So we sort of take it song by song and see what's going to happen then. This album we just are putting out it was going in so many different directions. It was like a very good problem to have. It was like, wow, there's so many different styles of music happening here. It's almost hard to pick which ones are going to go on the record.
Well, that's part of that. I think that time spent away from each other, or you know, that 11 years you speak of, that was, you know, I think a lot of us, I mean, or us kind of absorbing a lot more, a lot of different kinds of stuff. And, you know, I know Patrick Patrick had a maturation. Something happened in that time because now he's better than ever, really. He's got this
10
cool...
years in prison will do that to
that's
guy.
Right, that's right.
He's matured.
Hardened but he's, a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Yes. But and just the, you know, I know he kind of listens or has been listening to a lot of hip-hop and stuff and, you know, maybe more so than in these last years. And I think that's come through a little bit on the record.
I wanted to ask you about one of the other songs that I really love on this record, Don't Bother Me. It sounds like a furious rejection.
It does. Yeah.
Who is this about?
Oh, man. That's a whole other hour-long conversation. It's best that people take that song and do whatever they want with it.
Oh, really?
They can figure out a way they can relate to it, yeah.
It's about your arch nemesis.
The Joker.
Whoever that may be.
Whoever the listener's arch nemesis is, yeah.
So it's a chance for someone to take out, you know, their feelings via that song on anyone, including Jack, but you're not going to tell me who it's about.
Yeah, I can't. I legally can't. But the
isn't it obvious?
There's a lot of legal. We have a lawyer in the next room. He keeps shaking his head every third question you ask. I don't know what that's about, but no, I'm just kidding. He's not a lawyer. He's a doctor.
The song, like musically, it reminded me a bit of Black Math.
It does feel that way.
That breakdown at the halfway point, kind of from pummeling rock and roll to that swagger, you know, that funky swagger, I guess.
There's only so much my brain can do to try to make something interesting, or it just gives up and says, oh, I'll just make it sound just amazing.
I mean, you've spoken about it, Jack. You've obviously written a lot of songs on your own with three solo records, with The Dead Weather, you know, with a bunch of other collaborations you've done in the past. And Brendan, you've released a huge amount of solo work as well. When you're both drawing from this very rich legacy of songwriting, are there favourite songwriting tools that you go towards, that you return to, whether it's, you know, with your knowledge or not, whether it's something that's a little bit more subconscious or not? What are your tricks is what I'm asking. What are your tricks?
There's plenty. I mean, even you can use an instrument. You can use a piano or an acoustic guitar or a certain kind of acoustic guitar. Like Brendan brought in what's called a Nashville strung guitar, which is all the second strings of a 12-string guitar. It's strung all to the same note, and you can play totally differently with that. And you can use certain times you can use an instrument to sort of inspire you to go to a different place. One thing I love is when I'm ever at someone's house, I wish I could take a recorder with me, because I don't have a phone, but if I had like a handheld recorder, because whenever I go to someone's house and I just see a guitar in their living room and I pick it up, it always the first thing I play on it. I was like, oh, I wish I could record this right now. Yeah. I would have never played that at home at my guitar walking through my house. And I don't know why that always happens, but I always try to remember those when I'm getting in the car and leave that person's house. And I try to remember what those notes were. And then by the time I get home, I realize I've already forgotten them, and that song's gone, and forget it. It's wasted time. And why did I even go over there?
Why do I even bother?
Why don't you get a phone? Or a dictaphone, some sort of recording device.
I should have a little recorder at least with me. I used to carry one with me. Remember that I had those micro cassette ones? I used to carry that around a bit. And I don't do it anymore. I guess it's hard to find those cassettes, by the way, those little baby ones.
Yeah.
Used to sell them at the drugstore, but I don't know.
And you just don't want to get a phone, even though you're like your father, you got to know where your kids are. Do they have phones?
It's gone on so long now that I really can't, if it's gone too far, I can't join now.
Right.
I mean, what am I going to do? It would be a lot helpful. I'm sure everyone who works with me would love if I would finally do that. It would make their lives easier.
But, I'm sure there's something about being uncontactable as well, which is nice for you.
It is nice joking about being in the car. I mean, it is actually a pleasant thing to get in your car and drive away, because you cannot be reached, and I can do whatever I want to, and I don't feel tied into anything. It's very relaxing.
Yeah. There's a cover on this album, and you guys are no strangers to covers, but there's just one on this record. It's a cover of an old Donovan classic.
I'll buy you Cadillac. I'll buy you Cadillac. I'll buy you a Cadillac. Just give me some of your love, gal.
What drew you to cover Hey Jip on this new Saboteurs record?
You know, this is sort of like a little bit of a disease of mine. Like whenever we get into a room with a new project, a trick I like to use, when you were talking about tricks before, a trick I like to use is let's cover a song that nobody really has any real attachment to for any reason, particularly in this band. Let's get worked up by that, and then that'll break the ice and springboard us into other of our own songs.
Mm.
But the problem with that is what usually happens, and that happened with the song I'm Shaken on my solo record and the song New Pony on the Dead Weather's first album and other instances just like this, is that it ends up being so good we can't resist but put it on the album. You know, but that was not the intention when we recorded it. But I did say that out loud, and Brendan goes, oh, I've always loved that song. And Brendan pulled out a harmonica he had in his pocket. It happened to be in the key of that song. I don't know how he actually had that in his pocket at that moment in time. But we all learned in the records that Brendan can play harmonica. None of us knew that. So he got to keep his job for another month.
The record ends with a song called Thoughts and Prayers. You know, it's a phrase that for me, as soon as I saw that and heard it, it often is used following mass shootings in America. Mm. What compelled you to write this song?
Well, yeah, that is a part of it. It's sort of a phrase that, especially in America, has become a sort of a useless phrase. It's almost embarrassing to say anymore. And it almost means, yeah, we're not going to do anything about that. And this was a song that had no title for a long time. It had a working title called World War, and it didn't really describe what the song was about. I don't really want to go into what the song is about, as I want people to make it their own, because it's a kind of lyrics I wouldn't normally write, in a sense style I wouldn't normally write. And so I thought hopefully it would be something other people can adapt to in their own way. But I thought that phrase was good because it actually does – there's some talk of God and this person, whoever the narrator is, you know, and their personal thoughts. So it seemed to make sense, almost like a meaningless phrase that also could have a lot of meaning if it was said with the right intention, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and there's also some – I mean, musically, this is quite an emotive song. There's gorgeous fiddles that rise up in the moment, in the middle of it. Again, this seems to be a conversation between the two of you, and the fact that it sort of is the end of the record where Borden Raised is the beginning. Mm-hmm. Does it feel as though they're the kind of bookends of Help a Stranger, that it's the closing of the chapter?
It really is. It's funny. Yeah. We both said that as we were listening. It just seemed like – those two songs, they had to go first and last. There's, you know, I'm a big believer that songs pick where they want to be on an album. Sequencing is one of my favorite parts to do producing an album in it, because I think the songs sort of tell you where they want to be. It's bizarre. It's almost like a DJ set or something like that. You listen to that and like, okay, well, that feels like they should go directly into that. But those two songs, they had to be first and last. There was no other place to put them, really. And the fiddle you spoke of is the brilliant Lily May, who is coming out with an album this year on Third Man Records too, that is just a gorgeous album produced by
really
Dave Cobb.
Amazing.
I saw she was playing at the Nashville gig, wasn't she?
She was at the 10th anniversary show. She's great. She played fiddle with me on some of my solo tours, and her new album she's coming out with is, I can't wait for people to hear it.
Awesome.
Super cool.
The final line in that song, "There are reasons why it is this way," seems to kind of demand a blind faith. I know you don't want to talk about what the song is about, but knowing that you come from a Catholic background and that faith is something that you've grown up with, Jack, is there any sort of weight to that? Is there a hope, or well, I guess a blind hope?
The Catholic background I was raised with would not be a fan of me referring to God as a woman in that song, but I do think that it's that's you when some of the things you do as a songwriter, you look for not to recreate something from the past, but to try to do something that hasn't been done before, or also find some timeless things in the music and in the words where it can be universal. And if you can find phrases that are universal, and some of the best are sort of like maybe Bob Dylan's "The Times They Are Changing." You know, that phrase can be said any day of the week, as long as humanity exists. You can say that phrase and it will have immediate relevance. Doesn't matter how perfect of a utopia is ever produced, the words, "the times they are changing," is always going to be relevant. And you are lucky to find those kind of phrases. And so that's probably an attempt at that, to close that song, which is, you know, "there are reasons why it is this way." That kind of can be taken in several dozens of different ways. And it's nice to have that to close the song off.
I used to look up at the sky, up at the beautiful blue sky.
Double J.